it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. It's an absolutely beautiful day where I am, and I hope you're having a nice day too. Let's jump straight into it. A lot of news going on, a lot of games as well. A lot of games of consequence. Let's jump with the news, though. Let's start out with the Indigenous Round jerseys. Still a couple of games being played in the Indigenous Round with South East Melbourne and Sydney, I believe. A lot of the jerseys are sold out. Brisbane, Cairns, Perth have two varieties sold out, both their adult size without any name or number, and then also the Bryce Cotton version of their jersey. And then and Sydney also have their adult size jersey without any name or number on it sold out. And I've asked the clubs, I've said, you know, are they still available bespoke? Can you order them and they'll get made too? I didn't get a reply. But I guess what I'm driving at is a proportion of those sales go to help furthering Indigenous players playing basketball. So it's quite important that they are still made available bespoke or to order because obviously that whatever that percentage is isn't getting through if it's not there to be bought. So, you know, going back on what we spoke about last week where, you know, you can have your debates about the design, but I'd be doing everything I could to make sure that there's stock and ready so not only you can sell them, but then obviously hand over that percentage. That to me is a more practical and important cause, but nonetheless. Bigger news than that, well, not bigger news than that, but big news as well, Body Nudge reports Joey Wright will have some of his 2 years remaining on his contract eaten up and bought out by the 36ers. I think it's 2 years remaining. And is reporting he won't be the coach of the 36ers in NBL 20. My first thought is this is sad, but also accurate, I believe, is my understanding. Let's go into Joey Wright a little bit. 2018, they make the grand final. From that roster, they retain only four players. The key major non-re-signings from 2018 to now, Josh Childress, Mitch Creek, Nathan Sobey, Hodgson, Majuk Deng, they're the key non-signings. Obviously, the Mitch Creek saga left a sour taste in seemingly Joey's mouth, as it did everyone else. NBL 19, they finished the season tied fourth with, I think, 14-14. Tied fourth, but percentage knocks them down to fifth. So the question I really have for everyone out there is this 36ers team better or worse than their team in 2018 or even last year in NBL 19? My answer is no. Let's just look at NBL 19. Sobey, Moore, Drimmick, Wiley, Conger, Johnson, and Deng. That's your team. They all play a number of games. Ramon Moore missed a bit of time, but they're your major minute getters. Versus this year, Randall, Tease, Drimmick, Griffin, Obiche, Daniel Johnson. I know I've only named six. I've named seven in one, six in the other, but I couldn't find out who's that next guy up for the 36ers. It's probably Froling, but he was there last year. So, and as a result of this, they're presumably going to lose only two games less than NBL 19. With Moore out most of the year, Moore is set to play 20 games this year, miss eight. You know, that's almost a third of the season. That's a lot of games. 30% is a lot of games, or almost 30%. You know, so I'm a bit lost on this Joey Wright thing where people are saying, oh, he's not very good as a coach. Now, maybe he's lost touch with them, and maybe there's reason for that. I have my suspicions, as does everyone else. But the fact that you'd look at this roster and go, oh, they're two games worse than last year, you'd probably say, yeah, that's about where they're at. So I don't think Joey's done a poor job. Could he have gotten more out of these guys? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not inside that locker room. But yeah, there's been a little bit of that going on with Joey Wright, and I don't care for it. Let's jump on. Well, looking at them this season, at one point or another, they have beaten the Brisbane Bullets, who are in the top four, or were, Cairns, who are third, New Zealand Breakers, who are now top four. They've beaten Perth twice, once at home and on the road, and they've beaten Melbourne. Their season came unhinged with that loss to Illawarra when they lost at home, where they just didn't show up. And then being pumped by the Sydney Kings three times. They've had no answer for the Sydney Kings whatsoever. And then also in their last six games, they've gone 2-4. The wheels have come off for this team, most certainly. Looking into it a little bit more, there are two players who I want to talk about, Jerome Randle and Melo Trimble. Jerome Randle is in the top 15 MVP conversation. However, their stats mirror each other almost exactly, Randle and Trimble. Let's look at it. Usage rate. Randle, I'm going to name Randle's stats first, Trimble second. So Randle, 27.5 to 27. PER, player efficiency rating, 17.2 to 17.3. Assists per 36 minutes, 5.5 to 5.4. True shooting percentage, 55.7 to 56.4. I said Randle first, Trimble second. It doesn't really matter. They're almost identical. Where they differ is one is on the list of 15 players for MVP and one isn't. People have been banging on about a Melbourne bias against Lamar Patterson, the Sydney Kings, Perth Wildcats, and the Defensive Player of the Year, Cairns, la la, in the preseason. My thought is, look at what's happened to Melo Trimble. Melo Trimble's had the same year as Randle almost on a team that's actually going to compete for the finals. They've still got a slim chance. I don't think they're going to make it, but we'll talk about that later. You know what? Where are we at with this? You know, Melo Trimble's been called everything from a cancer, locker room split, this, that, everything else. The Antichrist. Is he having that bad a year if Jerome Randle's on the MVP 15? I don't know. I'll just quickly say to everyone out there, it's not 2017. John Casey is reporting that the Cairns Taipans have offered Scott Machado the biggest contract offer in Cairns history. Hopefully, he accepts it. Mitch Creek injured himself against Sydney. There's a lot of doom and gloom when that first happened. I saw it and thought, oh, he's hyperextended, which is always looks nasty, but he was walking. He walked off in a straight line, and he did look ghostly white. He was a little thrown off by it. But then in a timeout, I saw him moving his knee left and right. Now, normally if you do any real damage to that knee, once you move it left and right, it really hurts. You can walk in a straight line, but you can't alter left or right. And when I saw him shifting left and right and not in great pain, I thought, okay, that's a good sign. I thought the medical staff was pretty quick to put the ice on it, which may be a good thing, maybe a bad thing. It meant he definitely wasn't going to return for overtime. Roy Ward has since come out with a headline that reads, Mitch Creek has not suffered a serious knee injury after he went down. So hopefully he plays in the two games they have remaining this round, but there has been no formal update. Let's jump into the games. Heck of a lot to talk about. Game one, Brisbane hosted the New Zealand Bullets. New Zealand Breakers. The Brisbane Bullets hosted the New Zealand Breakers. New Zealand winning this one 87-91. I thought they would. This was closer than I expected. It was a great game. I really enjoyed it. Quickly, a couple of key stats here and interesting little tidbits. No Brisbane Bullet played over 30 minutes. 9 Bullets played double-digit minutes. 3 players between 10 and 20. The Breakers, on the other hand, had 6 players play double-digit minutes, and all 6 were over 20 minutes. 4 players played over 36 minutes. Hobson, Henry, Delaney, Abercrombie. Shamir works those starters is what I'm getting at. Brandon Ashley and Finn Delaney were the underrated champions of this game. Brandon Ashley had a plus-minus of 18, +18. The highest of the game in 25 minutes. They combined for 13 defensive rebounds. Delaney had 11 of them and held Brisbane to 7 offensive rebounds. And most were from Hodgson on one play when he'd miss a layup and like tap it in. So when you look at the actual sort of serious offensive rebounds, they were very, very limited. And Brisbane had been, you know, big on offensive rebounds to this point in the season. Team rebounding from New Zealand. Abercrombie and Hobson grabbed 14 rebounds, or 37% of New Zealand's rebounds in the 27 minutes they played. Whereas in a similar position, or from similar positions, Glidden, Patterson, Braun, Singler all combined for 10 rebounds, or 28%. Sounds pissy. Doesn't, you know, that 9% doesn't sound like a huge a margin. But you know, in a game decided by only 4 points, GST matters. 9% is almost GST. I'm not questioning their desirability, more just making a point about rebounding consistency. The longer guys are on the floor, they seem to get a better feel for rebounds. Plus, I just think the Breakers make rebounding priority. I feel like when you've got Magne and Hodgson, there's a little bit of the mindset of, oh yeah, the big guys will take care of it. Whereas because New Zealand is very much by committee, you know, Ashley, Delaney, none of these guys are Rob Lowe's quite tall, but they're not that huge rebounding presence, you know, that we know of. I'm calling these two the divorcees, Rob Lowe and Brandon Ashley. Rob Lowe has the first half, Ashley has the second. When Ashley learns how to control his body and not commit fouls and can play 35 minutes or better, and 35 minutes of good but foulless defense, he's a stud and an NBL first and second team candidate for sure. LP struggled with fouls, only saw 24 minutes in this game. He averages 29.5 minutes per game. So the question for this game was, what were the Brisbane Bullets going to do in that 5.5 minutes without LP on the floor? And that's what decided Brisbane's fate in this game and more than likely their finals aspirations. People say threes and layups. I say offensive rebounds, turnovers, and foul management, especially in the NBL when the refs are so, well, inconsistent. Is that what most people would say? Use that to your advantage. Okay, you know they like to call it soft. All right, we'll engage Lamar Patterson on defense every single time and see if he gets into foul trouble and take him off the floor. I don't know why teams don't do it more. Kadee went missing late. Had it early, but went missing late. Singler was unusually unimpactful in his 22 minutes. As a result, it fell to Sobey, who went 2 of 7 from the field for 5 points in the fourth. Sobey was great. Stepped up in a big game, but I don't know who came with him. Cam Glidden, 18 minutes, 0 of 1 from the floor, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 turnover. Seems like we have this conversation every week. I'm not going to do it again. Magne had a block and a contest that led to 5 points for Lamar Patterson on the scramble at the other end in the fourth quarter. Magne's timing and things is really brilliant. Didn't have a huge statistical game in this one, but nice rebounds, nice defensive pressure. I thought he was pretty good. But Brandon Ashley, who could or should have fouled out on a rough play over the back of Vekona at 4 minutes and 39 seconds of the third quarter, had 2 huge tip-ins to keep New Zealand in this game. That's the sort of story for me. He definitely fouled Vekona on a rebounding attempt, offensive rebounding attempt, but stayed in the game and then made 2 tips where he just had great timing for the ball. He just does. I wasn't high on Ashley to start the year, but now I'm pretty damn big on him. I think, I don't want to steal any thunder, but in an article this week, Tommy Greer came out and said the number one thing on defense is, what did he say? Athleticism and length. And that's Brandon Ashley. Finn Delaney with a huge play at the end into the body of Magne. Magne defended it really well, kept his height, almost blocked it. Delaney was just bigger and better. This makes it difficult for Brisbane as they now need to beat Perth in Perth, which we know didn't happen, or Cairns in Brisbane to kind of stay alive. Their finals chance took a huge hit, but we'll talk about that later. Second game of the round. Melbourne hosted the Illawarra Hawks. 95-72. Illawarra never really looked in it. I, like a lot of people, was very surprised at the Illawarra starting lineup. Hobson, Blanchfield, Conrad, Boone and Ogilvie. I think we'd seen Boone and Ogilvie earlier in the year and decided that perhaps wasn't their best way forward. And then Darrington Hobson again to start and play big minutes was surprising to me. But, you know, whatever. I think he had a pretty mediocre game in this one as well. My question coming out of this game, and looking at the year they've had and maybe their finals chances, is how good has Chris Golding been this season? I, like a lot of people, was probably pretty surprised to see him off the MVP list. Now, not that I was surprised that he wasn't on there, but surprised that I wasn't surprised he wasn't on it. And that's presumably now for the second year in a row where he's not one of the best 15 players in the NBL, or not thought of as one of the best 15 players in the NBL. So let's have a look at it. Chris Golding, 31 years old, 13th year in the NBL. Father time comes for all. Is it too premature to say it's come for him? Golding is 16th in points per game, 16.9 points per game at 41% from the field, 39% from three-point. CG 43 per 36. He's 20th in points per game, but be mindful that takes into account LaMelo Ball and Rice, who've left the league, but still 20th. That puts him below Matt Hodgson and above LaMelo Ball, but just above Kyle Adnam. So when I say those names, when I say, oh, it's per 36 minutes, Chris Golding scoring as many points as in between Hodgson and Kyle Adnam. 48th in field goal percentage, below Barlow, but above RJ Hampton. 18th in three-point percentage. Puts him in pretty good company near Cotton and Hobson. 28th in free throw attempts. That's below Mitch Norton, but above Josh Boone. CG43, Chris Golding, has scored over 20 points on 9 occasions in NBL 20. Melbourne have a record of 7-2 in those games. So I thought, okay, maybe the cumulative points aren't there, but when he scores big, they win. And it looks like they do, 7-2. However, let's look at the games in which he did it, because I feel like that's important. Twice it came against Southeast Melbourne, who are historically high pace. Twice it came against New Zealand, both of which earlier in the year, when New Zealand were finding themselves. Twice against Adelaide, again, high-paced. Twice against Illawarra, who my nan could put up 20 points against Illawarra, no offense to the Hawkheads out there. And once against the Sydney Kings, in a loss, I think. Oh, I should have written that down. But once against the Sydney Kings, who are good defense. Okay, so you look at all those occasions, like, you know, New Zealand, Adelaide, Illawarra, South East Melbourne, Sydney. Like, okay, it's worth something. But when I saw him catch fire against Illawarra in the second half, no less, I was like, it's just not the 20-point game that, you know, if that 20 had come in the first half and blown it out and he's sitting on the bench waving a towel, that means more to me. But nonetheless, last season, CG43 was 14th in points per game per 36 at 18.5. This season, as discussed, 20th, 19.5. I mean, obviously, he's gone from 14th to 20th, but don't read too much into that because obviously an extra team is coming to the league. So it's not surprising, but also more talents in the league. So he has kind of, I think Crow Homicide had this line, boats rise and fall with the tide. And it feels like CG43 is rising and falling with the tide of talent in the NBL. Something that Hammer, Shane Heal, said in the telecast really stuck with me. Melbourne look ruthless with every possession in this game. And he said that because they needed the percentage. So my question to everyone out there is, do you think Melbourne have been ruthless on every possession this season? I've only really seen it in two games. Somewhat in this game, but also the Mello Trimble game against, who did he go off against? Was it Brisbane? That game where Mello Trimble played really well, forgetting now. But those are the two games where I've seen ruthlessness and freedom of movement of players. Most other games, and I've seen patches of it and quarters of it, but never a full game, and I just want to see them be ruthless. I want to see CG43 running off baseline screens, looking to catch it and shoot it. Too often, all his shots, and I meant to look at his shot chart, but I will. Might put it up on Twitter, at NBL Pocket Pod. Seems like a lot of his shots are coming from the 45s and the top. And I know that's where he kind of likes it, but I'd like to see him swinging that baseline, coming off two hot, big picks from a Pledger, from a Long, from a Barlow, coming off catching it in the corner and shooting. But that's just me. Looking at the other side of the coin, the Hawks, only Conrad and Froling shot over 41% from the field. All of the other eight players who stepped on the floor for Illawarra shot below 41%, 18 of 59 for 30.5% to be precise. Let's talk about LaMelo Ball in this team. Since November 30, which was Ball's last game, Illawarra have gone 2 wins, 13 losses, and funnily enough have scored the exact same number of points with as without. They score 86 points per game with LaMelo Ball. They score 86 points per game without him. So for people to put the play of this team on LaMelo Ball when he played, it's just an SHITY thing to do. They're scoring as much as they were with him and after him. Does that say he's in? Does that mean he's sort of disposable? I don't think so. I think they did. I don't know if they look better without him, but they obviously won a little bit more and they beat Cairns, you know, which they haven't done since. So, I mean, I think there's something there. But anyway, if people are going to kick dirt on a teenager, you're welcome to. I'm just not so prepared to do it. There is talent on this team. And look at the ages here. Blansfield, 28 years old, prime. Boone, 35 years old, not prime, but around there. Ogilvy, 31 years old, semi-prime. Sunday Detch, 26 years old, entering prime. Nah, 25 years old. Greeter, 21. Conrad, 34. Froling, 20. David Anderson, 95. You look at this team, you know, we're dumping the success or failure of this club on the Mello Ball. He's 18 years old. You got guys in their mid-30s. Sorry, can't do it. Next game of the round, Adelaide hosted the Cairns Taipans, and Cairns won this one 80-99. Full disclosure, watched this game fleetingly. I was doing something else at the time. I knew they weren't going to win, the 36ers, I mean, and it wasn't attractive. This was not an attractive game. This is a team that was just, they're just looking at the calendar, just going, just end this season. Had a number of people get in touch with me after the 36ers win over the Southeast Melbourne with a deep dive into their stats and playing through Johnson and Randall. Yeah, I thought that was an aberration. And then, you know, I thought Southeast Melbourne don't play the defense where you can really get a gauge on them. And this game was just a nightmare. The 36ers starters were 13 of 50 for 26% combined. Whew. Points in the paint, 36 to 56 plus 20 in favor of Cairns. So they got beaten inside. They couldn't shoot. They couldn't hit. Friend of mine on Twitter, Dylan Smith on Twitter, I hope he doesn't mind using his full name, got in touch with me and said the game was ugly. And Randall, amongst others, was looking off people here and there and everywhere. Just ugly. You know, the ball sticking with hands, not moving. Bodie Nodge, who we've spoken about earlier with Joey Wright, he wrote a nice article about this game, and his appraisal was no different. One team is finals bound, the other is not, and it showed. Let's jump on to the fourth game of the round. Southeast Melbourne Phoenix hosted the Sydney Kings. Another good game this round, as I thought it might be. Southeast Melbourne have always played Sydney relatively close, and this game was no exception. Devondrick Walker into the starting lineup for Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. That didn't last long. He only played 15 minutes, had a couple of dubious shot selections, and was dragged. I thought, let's look at the numbers, because as much as Southeast Melbourne are below Adelaide on the table, I still find this team intriguing. What is Southeast Melbourne's best defensive lineup by the numbers? It's spatial jam time. And if you're a relatively astute or numbers conscious NBL fan, jump on and go to spatialjam.com. Donate as well. Really great little bunch of stats on off, lineups, whole bunch of stuff. Okay. Best defensive rating of 93, because you want a low number with defensive rating, for the South Melbourne Phoenix is this team. Magin, Pinot, Jay Crockett, Robertson, Creek. Obviously, Crockett's not there, but I just wanted to mention him because I really felt like, not that he was underrated, or the you need to rate people properly all the time. No, not that he was underrated, just underappreciated now that he's left. And I feel like he was, not enough was said about it. His mix with that team and his style, really liked him. Let's look at who they've still got in their team. In 147 possessions with a defensive rating of 115, which is mediocre, Gibson, Magin, Pinot, Robertson, Creek. Their best, if I took away the minimum possession limbo line, in 13 possessions, and this is the team that was on the court at the end of this game, and I really liked it, and maybe it's because they're playing against the Kings who don't score well, I don't know, but it was Gibson, Pinot, Robertson, Adnam, Creek. And I feel like that's their way forward for ending lineups this season anyway. The most played lineup, the semi-starters of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, Magin, Pinot, Robertson, Creek, Wesley, in 284 possessions, have a defensive rating of 121. Now, Sydney, the league's best, their best lineup has 106. That is a rather large discrepancy, if you're wondering. Most of Southeast Melbourne's best defensive lineups feature Adam Gibson. Surprise, surprise. And I felt this game was no exception. I thought he did well on Casper Ware, other than a couple of occasions when Casper had that drive to the hoop. We'll talk about that. Gibson, I just like his poise out there, and he hits big shots. Even at his age, I'm a big fan. Lot of Creek post-up action on offense. The commentary lamented not seeing more of him in high pick and roll, attacking the hoop downhill. I agree. Only had the two free throw attempts in this game. He's had 9 in both of the last two games. And there was a 19 to 25 free throw attempt discrepancy in this game. Obviously, if Southeast Melbourne had got that up to 6, if Creek had got his 7 plus free throw attempts and made 8 of them, they win this game by 5. Creek has had this injury that's been very mysterious, but it showed in his free throw attempts. Only now they just started to see the upswing again. I was shocked at the amount of late game lineup tinkering from both teams, but especially Will Weaver. Deshaun Taylor in and out, Sean Bruce in and out, a lot of tinkering going on. Let's talk about Deshaun Taylor. He was the fourth highest scorer for Sydney, played in crunch time and has the last couple of weeks. Moller looks unlikely to return, but my question to everyone out there is, Lish or Taylor late in game in the finals? I think Kevin Lish might have his feelings hurt in the NBL 20 finals. Just feel like Taylor's got that real step. It was a part of big plays in this fourth quarter. Getting clipped by Pinot, hitting a couple of shots, playing defense on Robertson, who was not particularly effective in the last 5 minutes. So, Deshaun Taylor, the former cut for Randall. Interesting. Casper Ware, I want to talk about this. That attack on the hoop with 19 seconds left in the fourth quarter to, I believe, tie the game. What a play. Only good can come of that play. He's going at the basket. He's either going to score two, which is what happened, or two free throw attempts, which he shoots 80 or 90%. He's just such a good player. Casper Ware, I mentioned him as maybe Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, it could have been Bogut. I saw he was missed in this game for sure. And I said this on Twitter. The big takeaway from me in this game was Andrew Bogut deserves to be on that MVP list of 15. Like, he makes such a difference to teams. But Casper Ware, could he be the Defensive Player of the Year? Maybe even MVP, the way they've played. But no, not MVP, but Defensive Player of the Year. I do believe he is the defensive anchor for the majority of the game in the league's best defense. So I'm a big believer in rewarding people for what they've done and what physically shows up in the stats, not just what, you know, the eye test and what you think. And I think Ware's one of those. Southeast Melbourne have had 5 games decided by 4 points or less. 11 points in total. If Southeast Melbourne had scored 16 more points in the right situation, 8 baskets, they win those 5 games and their record is 14-12 in the fourth spot with 2 games in hand. People rub, this team fell apart defensively towards the end of the year, but 16 points is all they needed to win 5 more games. That comes down to late game situations. We remember Creek twice. He had the layup, he had the putback, Pinot, da da. You know, lost games by a point, lost games by 4. But as I said, 5 games decided by 4 points or less. I haven't looked into the other teams to see whether that's a high number or a low number. But I think that would be up there in the upper echelon. So I'm a big believer in this Southeast Melbourne Phoenix team. I don't think a lot of tinkering has to be done to change this team for the better next year. All they need is a big who's got a little bit more length and defensive timing, and they're golden. Let's jump on to the 5th game of the round. Perth Wildcats hosted the Brisbane Bulls. Perth winning this one 85-72. This was a clamp, defensive clamping game from the Wildcats. Let's look at Lamar Patterson scoring by quarter, 8-6-5-6. For however many points, 20-some. Rebounds was important in this game. Brisbane have really dominated rebounds to this point. 44-48, offensive rebounds, 14 apiece. So Perth really committed to keeping them off the boards. And no small feat when Magne and Hodgson are there. They're very good rebounders. Taylor turnovers, 5-12 for the game. Perth committing 5, Brisbane committing 12. All Perth's turnovers came in quarter 3. They had none in the first, none in the second, and none in the fourth. Free throws, 20 of 22, 90% for Perth. 11 of 18, 61% from Brisbane Bullets. If they'd got that extra 7 points, they're losing by 3 points. A few baskets go their way. Whatever. I thought the Wildcats really kicked into another gear in the fourth. And people say, oh, the whistle and blah, blah, blah. Let's have a look at it. In the fourth quarter, the Perth Wildcats drew 9 fouls and shot 8 free throw attempts, all by Bryce Cotton. Bryce Cotton drew 6 of those 9 fouls in this quarter. He drew 12 fouls for the game. So he drew 12 for the game, half of them in the fourth quarter. The pressure he was putting them under defensively, he was just so incisive. He was just attacking the basket. He was coming off screens with intent to score, and guys were just fouling him. I didn't think it was an unfair home cooking whistle, but let's keep going. Here we go. To say it was a home cooked whistle, it's just tired and sensationalist tripe. I'm sick of hearing it, quite frankly. If you watch this fourth quarter and say, if you just look at the foul discrepancy and say, what was it? Brisbane had 7 fouls for 5, 7 drew 7 fouls for 5 free throws in the fourth quarter, whereas Perth drew 9 fouls and went to the line 8 times. Oh, that discrepancy is unfair. I'm just tired of hearing it. You look at this game, watch with your eyes. Cotton just puts this team under so much pressure, this team and any team under so much pressure attacking the basket, that of course he's going to get to the foul line and draw fouls. I really didn't see it. Most of Perth's fouls, on the other hand, came from an increase in defensive pressure. So they committed a bunch, very few at the hoop. Majuk needs a little bit of a stroke. 11 minutes, 3 rebounds, 2 offensive. Jesse Wagstaff, 2. 19 minutes, 7 rebounds, 3 offensive. So those two, in their minutes, really productive on the boards. And I find this funny, like, in the commentary, everyone's like, oh, Greg Heyer. They need Greg Heyer. And I like Greg Heyer. He's a fine little player. But if we're talking about NBL championships, Greg Heyer, They've still got Bryce Cotton. They've still got Tirico White. They have Miles Plumlee. They have Nick Kay, who's a boomer. If the buck is stopping in a championship with Greg Hire, I'm really sorry. I just don't think that's the case. And if Greg's listening, you know, no offense to Greg, he's a fine player, but you know, you still got Jesse Wagstaff, Bunthorpe. Anyway, Cam Glidden. Didn't we just talk about this? 21 minutes, 6 points, 2 of 7, 1 assist, 1 turnover, negative 15 in the plus minus. What's funny is I felt maybe they were pushing it like, okay, Cam Glidden's back at home. He's from Bunbury, West Australia. Maybe he'll play better at home. Did he? You tell me. Singler only played the 9 minutes. It was a bit of an experiment and a bit of a risk from the Marnus. And I don't know if it paid out. Well, they lost, so it didn't pay out. Let's talk about Clint Steindl. And, you know, a lot goes back and forth about Clint Steindl, about, oh, he can shoot on the road and he can't shoot on the road. Sorry, he can shoot at home, but he can't score big on the road. I had a good look into this guy's numbers. This took me a long while, quite some time, to look into. And let's have a look at the numbers. Clint Steindl, 9 points per game in wins, 8 points per game in losses. Clint Steindl, 9.2 points per game on the road, 8.8 points per game at home. However, this is the one I like the most. Clint Steindl, when he scores in double figures, the Wildcats are 9-3, a winning percentage of 75%. When he scores in single figures, the Wildcats are 8-6, 57%, an 18% swing. Now, does 18% matter to you or mean a whole lot? If Steindl had scored in double figures every game this year and that winning percentage had held true, the Wildcats would finish with a record of 21-7, which is, I believe, top spot. If he scored in single figures all year and that winning percentage held true, they would have won 16 games. Looking at that, it means something to me, that 18% for sure. The big difference between 21 and 16, and you can see where him, they've kind of bounced around. I think they're at 18, 19 wins, whatever it is. So from that, I mean, looking at how he scores very similar on the road to at home, to me, it's not about on the home, at home or on the road with Clint Steindl. It's about him personally and his consistency and getting him into games. And I feel like he always has shots for him. It's just whether he makes them. So that's going to be very interesting to see play out for the Wildcats going into the finals. Miles Plumlee. He's been so-so. 6 points, 7 rebounds in 18 minutes. It's more the lack of minutes that's got me kind of a little bit, not worried, but certainly sort of interested or perplexed. But what I like about Plumlee is he's allowed Nick Kay to play his natural power forward or four spot, or just not, I hate to really use positions, but it's allowed Kay to not have that defensive burden right at the cup. And that's just how it feels. Nick Kay has had 20-plus points in all of the last 4 games. Reminder now, Plumlee's been there for 6 games. The last time he had, and when I say he, I mean Nick Kay, the last time Nick Kay had over 20 points was the 15th of November. And that was the only other time this year he's had over 20 points. Coincidence that in the games that Plumlee's arrived, he's scored over 20 points 4 times in the 6 or 7 games, and yet had only done it once before in the preceding 25 games? Yeah, no, I'm not a big believer in coincidences. The same thing can almost be said for Lamar Patterson, his sort of running mate in this game, whose best basketball has seemingly coincided with Magne's injection into the starting lineup and playing bulk minutes. Could all be a coincidence? Again, I don't think so. Let's jump on. Let's look at round 20, the last round of NBL 20. And boy, this has been fun. What a great year. The game's this round 20. First game of the round, Melbourne against Cairns. I've got an asterisk next to it. This is the big one. If Melbourne are any hope, they've got to win this game. I don't think they do. I think Cairns win this one, which basically means that the top four is unchanged. But I will talk about the scenarios. Second game of the round, New Zealand Breakers host the South East Melbourne Phoenix. I think New Zealand are going to win that game, and that makes them very strong candidates for fourth spot. Third game, Sydney versus Illawarra. Sydney will win that. Next game, Brisbane and Cairns. This is another good game because if Melbourne do beat Cairns, this game has every relevance. I think Brisbane are going to beat Cairns, but the margin is important, but we'll talk about that in a second. And then the last game of the round, Perth v Adelaide. I think Perth are going to absolutely smash Adelaide. They've just got no interest. So for that reason, I think the final table will be... Number one will be Sydney, and I've read there's an article on NBL.com that details everything that needs to happen for each team to finish first, second, third, and fourth. So I'll go through it, and this is what I think is going to happen, and that may be worth absolutely naught, but nonetheless, here it is. You plant the seed. You hope it takes root. Top spot, Sydney Kings. They're not losing to Illawarra is why they're going to be in top spot. Perth, second, because they're not going to lose to the Adelaide 36ers at home again this season. Not going to happen. Third spot is going to go to Cairns. They cannot finish any lower than third, and I don't think the teams above them are dropping games this round. So that's why they stay in third. Now, fourth, lot of movement here, lot of digest as to what could happen. Me personally, I have the New Zealand Breakers, and that's because Cairns should beat Melbourne in the first game of the round, and if that happens, I'm a big fan of Occam's Razor. The outcome with the least amount of contingencies is the most likely to happen. If Cairns beat Melbourne, there are just too many provisos that has to happen for Melbourne to still make it. Like New Zealand have to lose to South East Melbourne, which I don't think is going to happen, and a bunch of things. But anyway, New Zealand Breakers, fourth spot, because Cairns should beat Melbourne, and Brisbane, while I think they will or could or might beat Cairns, they won't do it by the needed 20 points plus if Cairns beat Melbourne. And then obviously Melbourne are out because they're not going to beat Cairns in that first game of the round. And if they haven't won that game, there are too many variables like New Zealand dropping to South East Melbourne. I just said that. But that's what I've got written. And heaven be damned if I don't read it out. So that's what I think is going to happen. Get in touch with me at NBL Pocket. NBL at NBL Pocket Pod on Twitter. And at... NBLPocketPodcast@gmail.com if you want to send me an email. There's also Facebook, Instagram. I occasionally put up some shite on there. You can check it out. This has been a lot of fun. Before the finals, I'm going to do a bunch of things. I'm pretty sure we have a FIBA break. But in that time, I'm going to put up stuff about, you know, what teams should do or what teams could do, being the ones that haven't made the four. Illawarra, South East Melbourne, Adelaide in particular. Probably start with Adelaide, maybe Illawarra, not too sure. But that'll be out. I've got interviews with Ken Cole coming out, a 6-hour interview that I still got to break up. I've also got an interview with Catapult Sports that'll be out later in the week. We're talking about load management, Andrew Bogut and the Kings, and a bunch of other things. And that's really about it. NBL Incredibles I'm trying to notch up. This has been fun. I'm rambling. Enjoy the games rounds. Enjoy the rounds games.